Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Science tells us that the most effective storytelling is one that is human-centered around people, people we care about, we identify with, we relate to. And if you study people's brains when they're hooked on a story, they actually, their brains act like a participant, not a spectator. And then if you end on triumph, they reach the goal, you leave your viewer feeling, wow, I can do that too. It is a self, like, love begets love. Hope begets hope.
And I feel like what you're doing with this human-centered storytelling is trying to drag us in this direction. I feel like the world needs much, much more of it. The world would use could use a legion of Cheryl Housers, even though that's impossible because you're like this unique figure and unicorn. And one of my goals in having this conversation really was for you to try and impart some of what makes you you onto like other folks who want to be you. It is my pleasure to welcome to Yang Speaks, award-winning filmmaker and human storyteller extraordinaire, Cheryl Houser. Cheryl, welcome.
Thank you, Andrew. I'm thrilled to be here with you.
And Cheryl, you and I go way back where first I'll take listeners to the beginning of the campaign. There was this video that sort of launched the campaign. It was me saying, I'm Andrew Yang, and there were robot arms and graphics around universal basic income. And I loved that video at the time. And I now realize just what an extraordinary filmmaker you were, because you didn't have much to work with during that time. there was like the campaign as we know it today didn't exist. So there was no footage of crowds. There wasn't even me really interacting with folks. And so you had to work some real magic. I'm not sure how many people listening to this remember that first campaign launch video, because no one was paying any attention. But thank you for taking that challenge on. Like, I thought you aced it at the time, and now I appreciate it even more.
Well, thank you. It was a challenge, mostly because I'm such a visual storyteller and I like telling stories. Film is it's all about capturing action. And there was really no action we could capture with you because you hadn't declared yet. You weren't out interacting with people. Also, you're all about humanity first, and I couldn't capture you with other people. And that's what humanity is all about. So we did film with you and then had to license some of the footage to bring some of what you were saying alive. And that was very painful because I love capturing original footage and capturing really beautiful original footage. But you know what? As a filmmaker, filmmaking is problem solving, and it's all about, okay, how do we tell this story and how do we tell it with what we have to work with right now? And your message came through loud and clear, and so did your humanity. And that's what mattered.
Now, one reason I wanted to have this conversation with you is because I feel like there are a few things happening. One is that so much of the way we communicate now is through stories. And that's from folks trying to promote something on their social media to politics, for sure, all the way up to documentary films. And I found it both frustrating, but also edifying, that it seems like politics is really becoming very much about storytelling. It's about trying to message your policy in particular ways. And I feel like people could use like a primer on effective storytelling, which is sort of what I wanted you to come and talk about, because there's just a lot of bad stuff out there. And I know you're a seasoned pro, so when you see a video, you're like, oh, this is not very good about a lot of things. But what I kind of wanted to do is for you to lay out for someone who's passionate about something, maybe it's about a candidate or a cause, or really about how they can most effectively convey their excitement in an effective way using, let's call it, video as a medium. And now I'm not talking like, you know, hour long video. I'm talking about right now, I suppose in this era, it's more likely to be like a 60-second video.
Sure. I believe strongly in human-centered storytelling. I mean, it's not only what I believe in, it's what the science tells us is what's most effective. And I use storytelling as a driver to create understanding, break down biases, create connection between people. And especially now more than ever, you know, when we're becoming more and more polarized, to show that what we have in common is so much, as human beings, so much greater than what separates us. I mean, and to use storytelling to not just create understanding, but also to drive action. So, and solidarity. But, for anyone who wants to reach others, it's important to understand who you want to reach, and then to, cast people who are relatable to whoever you're speaking to, and bring, viewers on an emotional journey through that person. So casting
for most people on their social media, their casting is just going to be themselves.
So if it's themselves, it's about being vulnerable, being authentic, being genuine. People really can pick up when someone isn't. Now, when you're as good a liar as our president is, he comes across as, to some people, as authentic. But most people, when they're putting on a show and not being genuine, people sense that. And that's one of the reasons why you were so popular, Andrew. You were very real. You were yourself. You were vulnerable. You were fallible. You were, you know, and you started out a bit, the robotic, the numbers guy, not accessing as much your humanity. And that was something you grew into as you became more comfortable on the campaign trail. It was always there. So, you know, I guess I'm not here to ask you questions, but, even in terms of your learnings on the campaign trail, what did you experience as what resonated most with people about you?
Well, we had a joke on the campaign trail where we're going to start with people's heads and then move to other body parts. And I think that was true about me too, where when I started out, I thought, okay, we've got this massive problem that I can see in automation and the transformation of the economy. I have facts and figures that I've researched and have confidence in and conviction in. And so let me try and communicate this to folks. And it was effective with some narrow band of people, certainly not like this whole swath of people, which I think I expected, and you always pushed me on this too, because you were with the campaign in the early days, and then as we progressed, where you thought that we needed to make more emotional appeals, and I'll say for me it was a struggle, because that wasn't my natural mode of trying to communicate or deliver a message. You know, I've been the CEO of a private company, and I was very seldom burying my soul or tugging on my heartstrings in that role. You know, it was like, okay, here's the goal, here's what's going on, here are numbers, here's the best approach, let's go do that. And we tried to have fun, like I tried to be fun, but a lot of the time it was just about trying to get specific actions done. So it was a lot of learning for me, Cheryl. And did I expect that learning from the beginning? I think I underestimated it. I think I underestimated the humanity involved in running for president, which might sound ridiculous if you say that, but I believe it's true of me.
Well, you always had that humanity. I mean, the movie we did together, Generation Startup, it's there. And when we traveled across the country together at event screenings, very present. And you certainly grew into it. It's funny, you talked about, in Generation Startup, you're Yoda. And on the campaign trail, you were Luke Skywalker.
And Yoda in Generation Startup. So let's give...
Well, but to finish your question, I mean, it's basically, I think people have to be themselves, genuine, authentic, human, and then take viewers on an emotional journey. And that can be on an emotional journey around them, why they're running, why they care about the issues they care about, or through other people.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
When you came to me, I guess it was in January or February, when you were gaining some traction, but not hadn't broken out widely yet. And you said, Cheryl, what can you make for me that captures my humanity and our slogan, Humanity First? And that's when I said to you, we need to find people who embody the need for your policies, who are brimming with humanity. And we used you as product placement in those spots. I mean, we filmed with two people, a man and a woman. They had certain issues, problems they were struggling with. And then, we captured them in a way that they were very relatable, universally relatable, even though they were very unique and particular in their identity and stories. And then you came in as kind of the savior who, with your policies, would change their lives. So we showed, not tell. I mean, it's also really important in storytelling, especially in film, a visual medium. It is show, not tell. People don't take in information, or they take it in much better if it's the information is in service to a story that touches their hearts. And so the, science tells us that the most effective storytelling is one that is human-centered around people we care about, we identify with, we relate to. We release oxytocin when we watch something about someone we care about, and that is the love hormone. It's what makes us feel attracted to somebody. It's the hormone we secrete when we kiss, when we breastfeed, when we have sex, when we hug, when
we watch videos of our kids as like the one.
Exactly, you feel warm and fuzzy. It actually changes your body chemistry. And then the story needs to be structured in a way where there's some tension and rising tension. And if so, that's what captures our attention and holds our attention, because we secrete cortisol. And cortisol is it's a hormone that is from our the amygdala, the fear center, and it's what heightens our attention. So if you have rising tension in a story, and you have people who are relatable, the cortisol grabs the attention, keeps your attention, because, I mean, we're in an attention-starved world, but even before social media and all these other things, our brains are prone to wander, but you want someone engaged. So it engages our brains, it engages our heart. And then if I believe strongly in structuring stories that, well, the classic story structure from like ancient times to today is there's someone, that person has a goal, there are obstacles in the way, the person has to struggle to reach the goal. We have to understand what's at stake. The bigger the stakes, the harder it is to reach the goal. The more we identify with the person and root for them, the more we go on that emotional journey with them, which is actually, if you study people's brains when they're hooked on a story, they actually, their brains act like a participant, not a spectator. So you can actually bring someone on an emotional journey. And then if you end on triumph, they reach the goal, you leave your viewer feeling, wow, I can do that too. And then it also releases dopamine, which is kind of the reward center from the reward center of our brain. So it leaves us feeling optimistic and hopeful. So
So it sounds like you start with oxytocin and then you get to cortisol and then you hope to leave them with dopamine.
Right. And the way to do that is to tell stories about somebody the viewer cares about, whether it's the candidate telling his or her own personal story where we care about the person and that person's struggle. It could be personal struggle. It could be struggle of why they care so deeply about why they're running or a certain issue. And then ending with a sense of hope. Because if you leave people with no hope, then they're not going to feel like they should take any action, because if they're not going to be able to achieve their goal, then why bother? You know, you want to,
Cheryl, one of the criticisms, you know, I had and like I struggled with, we've all seen those cheesy political ads. It's like, you know, it's a black and white photo and it's like, I grew up like, you know, the son of a cobbler or like the daughter of a Thatcher or what, you know, I mean, I'm making that up because I don't think we have Thatchers anymore, but it's like where you make the person relatable and then like you make it seem like they overcame this hard scrabble background and then like you have some uplifting photos of them, you know, like I personally have lost patience for those political ads. And I know when you and I talked about this stuff, like I struggled a little bit with trying to convey things in a way that felt personal to me, that just didn't feel like artifice, or it's like, okay, hit this beat, hit that beat. Because I feel like at this point, people have just lost all patience with political ads and communication. But it sounds like the things you're saying appear in a lot of these political ads. So do political ads look the way they do because they work?
Well, I don't know, but I think that execution, it's always the devil is in the details, right? It's like what I'm laying out, you can, like any story, you can execute well or you can execute poorly. So cheesy's horrible.
Movies that are out there. Like,
yeah.
You know, no one sets out to make a bad movie, but there are a lot of bad movies that get made.
Sure. And it's not paint by numbers. It's not like there's no formula to follow. It's really about for every single person finding what is most genuine to them. But that doesn't mean cheesy. And cheesy is how something's shot. It's the music. It's the graphics. It's cheesy is, you know, it's a quality. And so I think that you want the feeling of a video to reflect the identity and feeling of the candidate, not to, because everything, again, this, I hate the word authenticity because it's so overused, but like you, that is one of the many reasons, Andrew, why you broke out, because you didn't study what do other politicians do and how do people running for office, how am I supposed to behave? You didn't do that. You were you. You always showed up as you.
Well, one thing that we found early in the campaign when we were shooting various videos or appeals, where the most effective appeal was just me talking to my cell phone camera. I think because of what you're describing, where it strikes people as very genuine and human because everyone talks to their phones. And so it seemed like you couldn't fake anything. And I think that's something I've seen with younger political figures,
yeah,
where they seem really good at that.
Right.
You know, I'm not sure how excellent an Instagram soliloquy deliverer I am, you know, in the scheme of things. But I agree that just giving someone a glimpse into your moments on the trail or your, you know, like home or whatever it happens to be, like it makes them feel like they know you in a particular way. I think if a politician was not able to do that, then it seems like there's something missing.
Well, AOC's launch video was brilliant. It wasn't hugely polished, but that didn't matter. I mean, in terms of how it was shot, it actually probably was helpful that it felt so real. And it was everything I just described in terms of, you know, her struggles, her journey, her why, her being relatable, but it was, not cheesy. There was nothing cheesy about that video. So it's all about the execution. And people being vulnerable, being themselves. I mean, you know, you see even studies about leadership and what builds trust and what builds loyalty among a leader. It's if that person has credibility and then that person is vulnerable and shares that they're fallible or that they're scared about something or that, you know, shares human emotion that we all have, then people see that person as human, not superhuman. You don't want to be seen as superhuman because then you don't seem approachable. You don't seem real.
Most people probably would like to be seen as superhuman.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
When you're starting out, particularly if you're running for office, as I was, you do feel some sort of pressure to be competent and not super vulnerable, shall we say. There came a point in the campaign where I became increasingly comfortable with the fact that I could evince some degree of vulnerability or struggle and not have people just say like, oh, like, you know, this person's like not serious or not presidential or whatever it is. I mean, president is uniquely tough because there was this struggle to quote unquote seem presidential. and then so when I just joked about like most people would like to be seen as superhuman, is that I think. And even if you have the reverse of it, too, it's like if for example, the first image you see of a candidate or a social media story is of the person struggling and you don't know them or don't like have a sense of them, then like there's a concern that it'd be more of a turn off than like a reason to try and get behind someone. Like if I'd never seen a candidate before and the first thing I saw was them talking about how hard it was, I'd be like, like, I'm not sure if I necessarily would buy in, or am I wrong about all of this?
It's a good question. I mean, Andrew, when you cried on the campaign trail after one of those school shootings and you got up to give a speech and you broke down in tears, do you know everybody felt, the ones who were in love with you already fell more madly in love with you, and you picked up so many supporters at that moment. And I think that a lot of people who were moved by that had not been aware of you prior to that. So, you know, had you been a woman and you cried, I think it might have backfired. So there are some gender issues.
Yeah, so that's an excellent point.
But when you posted your somebody found, or you posted your high school or some
well,
some
it was coming out in New York Magazine, and then I had to be like, well, this is coming out anyway, so I should just
posted something from your yearbook in Goth, people went wild on social media because you were human, you were relatable, you were, you know.
What you just said about gender, though, I think is really interesting. And this is something that Zach said to me on the trail, too, where if you do something against type, then people like it. So, you know, if I'm supposed to be the Asian tech entrepreneur. And then I cry because there's a grieving mom who tells me about how her 3-year-old or 4-year-old was shot in front of her. And then that's like not what you'd expect. So then people are like, oh, it's like a third dimension. Where is it? You just said it like if you had a woman and she acted emotional in the same way and she cried, then you might not interpret it favorably because you're because it's not necessarily quote unquote like against type. I don't know if that's if that makes sense or is right.
I think what it boils down to truly is how genuine the person is. You know, if somebody turns on the faucet and cries because it's a manipulative move, I'm going to do this because I think people will find me sympathetic. It's, you know, horrible. But I mean, you were so, I keep saying this, you were so genuine. And that's, you know, when you said, I kept thinking, how do I be presidential? You actually, you didn't care that much about being presidential. You didn't care about running your campaign like everyone else did. You didn't wear a tie on that first debate because
or any of them.
Like, you know, or well, after that, you couldn't wear one after that. I mean, you know,
yeah, that's probably
but
true.
You know, it's, you know, it's, I don't think you overthought like, you were like, this is who I am and I'm going to be me. And so, and people felt that they felt that here's somebody who's not a politician. They were so relieved that you were not a politician and that you cared deeply. And, you know, so in terms of, you know, when we did that video together with Joe Lamar and, in the edit room, I chose to open that video with him weeping. You know, he's this big guy, what, 6'3", 6'5", covered in tattoos, looks, you know, everyone looks at him and thinks he's a gangster, which is horrible stereotyping. But we're, you know, I filmed with him and he's there weeping about how he's working two jobs, getting 3 hours of sleep a night, even working two jobs can't make ends meet. At the end of the video, you know, the comments on the social media and also on the 8-minute doc were extraordinary. People saying how much they admire Joe, the solidarity they felt with Joe, how strong Joe is, that, you know, so people saw Joe as super strong. They did not see him as weak, even though we opened that video with him crying. So I
Joe's an amazing guy. But I agree with you. I think that maybe as a person who's in that boat, it's like sort of harder to embrace that sort of thing. But I agree with you that most people would find it appealing and human. So on this topic, I think some people are probably curious as to how you came to be a storyteller. Like, what's your story in terms of your doing this work? And obviously I know a lot of your backstory, but I think some people listening to this would be like, how does someone become like an award-winning filmmaker, and how did you get to this stage?
So when I was in college, I worked on a feature documentary called Children of Darkness about children with mental illness. And we were a tiny team. We were three people, the director, cinematographer, and me. They were older
men. How old
were
you at this point, Cheryl? You were?
I was 19. And so I spent my days in these psychiatric wards with young children. And I was, you know, getting to know the kids and getting them to open up and finding their stories. And sometimes interviewing them on film because they had formed that trust and bond with me. And then, you know, learning from, you know, these two amazing filmmakers, and came out of college and, worked in feature films as a producer, was one of the producers on, and Children of Darkness was a heart-wrenching film to make. It was nominated for an Academy Award. The filmmaker, the director died young, and his sister put it up on YouTube 10 years ago. It has an astronomical number of views, which is extraordinary for a 35-year-old movie. Then, you know, came out of college and moved into producing, and was one of the producers of David O. Russell's first movie, Spanking the Monkey, and was making films out in Hollywood, and then started having kids and didn't want to be in LA all the time. So I moved into nonfiction television.
So you moved to LA directly out of college?
No, I stayed. I moved to London directly out of college, and I worked with Robert Bolt, who wrote Dr. Zhivago, Lawrence of Arabia, Man for All Seasons, and won many Academy Awards. And he had had a stroke, and he was writing The Mission. And I did all the historical research for The Mission and worked with him on an adaptation of a Gore Vidal novel. And I got that job because of a trait that I use in everything I do now, which is very active listening. I went and met with him, and he was very hard to understand because he'd had this stroke. And I listened with my whole body and core. And I think he felt relaxed, and he felt I could see and hear him, and that we could communicate. And he hired me to do all the research, and we grew very close. And then when I moved back from London, I started producing feature films in New York, but was in LA all the time, because that's where that world is. And then when I had my first child, whom you know, Avery, I didn't want to be traveling so much. So I moved into nonfiction television when that was just coming of age, and made hundreds of hours of television for Nat Geo, Discovery Channel, and all of the cable channels, and was always second in command building the company for other people. But I got to an age and stage about 10 years ago where I felt that I had tremendous talents that I could be using for more meaningful work. And I finally got up the courage to go out on my own and launched Creative Breed with the mission, one, to only tell stories that would inspire me and inspire other people and lead to positive social action or positive action, good juju in the world. And then only work with people who aligned with my values, because those two things are super important to me. So now I tell human-centered stories across all platforms, the feature documentary we did together, Generation Startup, to, you know, web series, national campaigns, branded content, but all with the goal of breaking down biases, forming emotional connection with people and between people, and spurring people to take action.
So you and I worked closely together on that documentary, and if anyone's listening to this wants to see a feature documentary about a group of young entrepreneurs trying to make positive things happen in Detroit, Generation Startup is a phenomenal film that I make cameos in as Yoda, as Cheryl said. But Cheryl is the co-director and producer of that movie. And that was a real labor of love. I learned so much from you during the making of that film. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I certainly lived everything those young entrepreneurs were living, but it was a lot of fun. And thank you for trusting me, Andrew, to take that journey together. Because we filmed with six Venture for America fellows over the course of a year and a half, and you didn't know, and I didn't know where those stories would go. But when we met to talk about doing it, I said to you, I can make a beautiful commercial for you that you can use for recruiting and for fundraising, or you can, and you know, I'll make, you are the client, I'll make whatever you want. Or you can give me full access, full editorial control, and I will make a feature documentary. I promise people will laugh and they will cry. But whatever happens along the way, if a Venture for America fellow goes off the rails or something that happens, like that's going in the movie if we've been following that person. And you said in your characteristic, you know, truth-seeking way, that is what I want. We glamorize entrepreneurship. We only hear about startup founders when they're successful. Yeah. And we need to tell the honest story, the true story of how hard it is, but also how rewarding it can be. And that, you know, and you never asked me in those year and a half, what are you recording? What are you capturing? How's the film going? I mean, meanwhile, I was like, oh my God, are we going to have a film at the end of this? I was tracking the stories very carefully, but you don't know until you go into edit. Like, is it going to like hold together? Even until the very end of the edit, I was very, very worried. How are we going to make these six disparate stories a cohesive whole?
Yeah, it was a daunting challenge, but you pulled it off and then some, you and the team. I love that movie, and it was a privilege to be a part of it. And, you know, the fact that it touched so many people made me really happy. It was funny because I tell jokes that probably cut a little close to home for you, but I talk about how, like, I wouldn't wish the world of independent film on my worst enemy because I saw what you went through. But I just know that that's like an industry where it's got to be people doing labors of love, because like it's not like anyone's like throwing riches generally. I mean, and, you know, like other things you might hear about, like the one crazy outlier. But for the most part, it's a very, very tough field. And it's like the spirit of entrepreneurship that you were containing. So that you were capturing was actually being embodied through your filmmaking process. I mean, you're one of the reasons why I appreciate creatives so much, because just about every creative is really an entrepreneur in the truest sense. You know, yeah. You have like a vision, you're trying to make something positive happen in the world. I don't think creatives get enough credit for this reason. One thing I said on the trail a lot was that artists have the same impact on an economy or a community as entrepreneurs do. Like if you have a group of artists move to a town, then you should invest in real estate in that town, because the values are going to go up the same way as if a group of entrepreneurs moved there.
Well, and also your whole push for UBI to enable people to have time and a little time and space to pursue creative endeavors, not to monetize them, but just because it's such an important form of self-expression and getting in touch with our own selves and our own identity. But I was drawn to telling that story because I had just launched my own company, and it took me decades to get up the courage to take that step. And I was so inspired by these young people who were taking, you know, risks at like knowing so much less than I did at a much younger age. And they kept me going. I mean, I looked at them and their resilience and their courage, and I was like, okay, Cheryl, they can do it. You can keep going too. You can do it too. So,
So for folks who are trying to, well, a lot of people listening to this are like, oh my gosh, like I would love to get into that industry. But I think we're right now, you look out there and you have this incredibly discerning eye, and you see a lot of bad stuff. You see some good stuff. You know, I mean, like there's a lot of not compelling video content, shall we say, out there. So assuming that folks who are listening to this are creators or creatives, you've laid out some of the big principles around having a relatable character who's authentic and struggles somewhat. So that could be you, the filmmaker and subject simultaneously, or it could be you finding someone else.
Yes.
And then there's a degree of struggle or adversity that they go through, which we're all kind of familiar with the hero's journey, and like, you know, that like the obstacles come up. And then optimally you wind up with some triumphant note, or at least feeling of optimism.
But the triumphant note has to feel genuine. It cannot feel pat. It has to be like, which is why in Generation Startup, that film is so powerful, because it's hard won. They all are triumphant in, but also triumphant in very non-conventional ways, some of them, which is why the tagline for the film is, learning to fail, redefining success, because
yeah, and this is one of the big themes of my campaign, and something I'm very passionate about, is that if you do something and you believed in it and you put your heart and soul into it, and it quote unquote doesn't work out, or like you don't become rich or something like that, like it's still incredibly rewarding and formative. And it's a frustration of mine that we essentially at this point will let others tell us what success is. You know what I mean? Like, or let
always
the market tell us what success is.
Well, I mean, that's what holds so many of us back from doing what we really want to do is, like, even you talk about it, the values and measures of success in our society are around how much money do you make, or what is your job title, or where, or like, what company.
Even when I introduced you as an award-winning filmmaker, which you are, but there is, like, a little bit of, like, this, you know, Cheryl might not have won an award, and she'd still be incredible and awesome as, like, a
the more important thing is that, again, to, you know, I told you when we started making the movie, I mean, for me, it wasn't a horse race to see, like, which of these companies will succeed and who's going to do better. I mean, it was, all I cared about was, will these, I call them kids, will these young people, they were 21, 22, 23 years old, will they learn? Will they grow? And for me, that movie, Generation Startup, is about celebrating moving outside our comfort zone to learn and grow, to test ourselves, to see what we're capable of, and also working hard to make our communities stronger and to lift up others along with us. So for me, that movie was never about success in the conventional sense. And everyone in that film, they all learned and grew so much. I mean, in terms of measuring your success, you know, when you started out, everyone thought you were nuts, Andrew, and
really,
longer than a long shot.
Really, themselves, Cheryl. No one told me.
Well, and then, you know, in terms of success, I mean, you made it, first of all, you made it much further than anyone would have ever bet. But also, what you were trying to do was make the things you cared about that you saw that most others didn't see part of our, you know, open our eyes to what was happening in the country. And you also wanted to normalize this idea of a freedom dividend or human, you know, universal basic income, which now, you know, you were so prescient about all of that. So you succeeded in a big way. And now you have a lot of exposure that you're using to drive humanity forward. So I would call, you know, even though you're not our presidential candidate, I mean, I would call your run a tremendous success.
Well, thank you, Cheryl. You were a big part of it. And certainly you helped in day one by making what I thought was a very well done, clever, resourceful video, given what we had.
I want to say, if people are listening to this and they're thinking of hiring me, do not use that video as the benchmark for what I'm capable of. That's all I want to say.
So they can look up your work and they can take their pick. Certainly, I agree. Like, that video, like, she did on a shoestring.
Right,
with
I'm
very, very little footage. And just made it happen. But I thought that video was, like, a crucial part of our having any launch at all. Because even when I was trying to plan my presidential launch. And I was like, what do I need at a bare minimum? I need a website. I need a piece of press, like something kind of credible. Yeah. And I need a snappy campaign video. And then if I don't have those three things, then, like, I should not even call myself an entrepreneur. You were the third leg of the stool, very much so, because I thought you made a very snappy campaign video with very limited material.
It at least was snappy. It was, definitely. And it wasn't cheesy. It wasn't cheesy. So even if some of the licensed footage was. But yes.
One reason why I always admired you so much and we bonded over this is that you just seem like such an amazing parent to me, having met your kids now, and, you know, they're in their 20s, a lot older than mine. But you had such empathy for them too, and they've become such fully formed, interesting, fascinating, creative adults. And that was something I always admired about you a great deal. Like, I hope to live up to your example on that front.
I'm sure you are, Andrew. I'm sure you are. But again,
I don't know. You set a high bar, Cheryl. Like, your kids are freaking phenomenal. Not to say, you know, like, that's not, again, the measurement. But, like, you know, you just seem like such a loving, warm, empathetic, understanding parent.
Thank you. You know what? I think that enlightened leadership, enlightened parenting, and, you know, it all boils down to all the same qualities that I bring to storytelling. And it's about engaged, active listening, really listening to our children and not trying to control them, letting them be who they are and having compassion or empathy for what they're going through. You know, if a child is throwing a temper tantrum, it's very easy to, as a parent, to get very frustrated. But I think the important thing is to have compassion for the child and try to understand what's causing that temper tantrum, you know, and then just being very real and teaching them. Like I tried to teach them to trust their gut and to hone their values. And I, you know, from a very young age, if they would come to me to work through something, I would just ask them a lot of open-ended questions to try to mirror back to them how they were feeling and help them navigate and figure out what they wanted. You know, my husband and I, we never tried to tell them who they should be or what they should do. And I did say to them, I said, you know, we don't expect you to do everything well, but don't half-ass the things that matter to you.
Just commit yourself to doing whatever you do. I mean, I think that's...
Yeah, and do that well. I mean... But I'm most proud of them, Andrew, for the people they are, for their values, for their caring, their, you know, their high, you know, such strong values. I'm proud of them for who they are as people, not for their accomplishments, which are theirs, not mine.
Well, there's so much that people could take from really even what seems like relatively simple principles around parenting and leadership. You know, I think that degree of listening to people and letting folks discover things for themselves and also trusting them.
Yes.
You know, I think there's a lot we could learn from that. You know, like that, like you are. So let's say there's one extreme, and you know, and the caricature of me actually embodies this extreme. Though you're one person that always. You know, poo-pooed the caricature, which I appreciated.
I poo-poo all caricatures. I poo-poo all stereotypes. But yes.
So, like, if you have on one side, let's call it like the facts, figures, like math, hyper-rationality, data-driven, you know, calculating, and then on the other side, you have like human, emotional, empathetic, caring. Stories and the rest of it, and the caricature of me is obviously all the way over here. You've always said like, no, Andrew, you're actually like much more human, and then I would sort of make some self-deprecating joke about being like the robotic Asian guy or whatever it happens to be. You know, and I think that there's so much to be taken from your point of view, really, and it's something that our country is struggling with in a very real way, where you could also, if you wanted, and this is a generalization, obviously, but you could, like, you know, put the gender polls, where when you talked about being the second in command who helped build these various enterprises, like, at least for me, I heard it's like, I have a feeling there are a lot of women who hear that who are like, yeah, like, that's the way it is in my department, or that's the way it is in, like, a particular... you know, like they look up at their management team, they see that sort of dynamic. I think that our economy, in my opinion, is becoming increasingly inhuman and punitive and like veering off to like this rightward direction. And my big goal is to try and humanize it. I feel like what you're doing with this human-centered storytelling is trying to drag us in this direction in a positive way. I feel like the world needs much, much more of it. The world would use like could use like a legion of Cheryl Housers, even though that's impossible because you're like this unique figure and unicorn. And one of my goals in having this conversation really was for you to try and impart some of what makes you onto like other folks who want to be you. And I know there are many people listening to this or watching this who are thinking like, wow, this woman's amazing. Just wanted to lay out that was like the impossible goal I'd set for myself in this conversation.
Yeah, but Andrew,
you express my profound gratitude for everything you've done and who you are.
Oh, well, I feel the same about you, Andrew. You know that. But, and you know, you say the caricature of you is, you know, maybe that, like, you know, the math guy. But we all know that's not who you are. I mean, why did you risked so much, and you left your family for 2 years, and you, like, went on this campaign trail because you had a calling. You were driven because you were so empathetic to what you saw happening in our country. So you engaged your big brain to see, look at the data and see what was happening, but then you engaged your big heart to say, I see what's happening and I can't let it happen. I have to take action. And in your taking action, you stirred everyone else to follow you in solidarity to change what's happening. And that's what I try to do with storytelling. The same thing, to create action and solidarity. But you know, you ask in your book, and your slogan was humanity first, and now you're humanity forward. And in your book, you ask, what makes us human? What makes us human is our ability to love, to feel, to care, to have empathy, to feel empathy. And, you know, in all of the, you know, there's this guy, Paul Zak, who's done a ton of studies in the lab around storytelling and around the oxytocin and the cortisol. But he, you know, one of his studies, he would play a video of a father talking to the camera about his son, who's 2 and dying of cancer. And it follows that hero's journey of the father's, I have to be strong for him. And then at the end, and he's taking people's oxytocin, the beginning, the end, you know, cortisol, all of that. At the end of that story, he asks, do you want to donate some of the money you're being paid to be in this study to a charity that gives money to for children with cancer? And the higher levels of oxytocin that people have in their blood indicated they would give more money. I mean, and then the people who did give money felt warm and fuzzy after giving the money, and the people who didn't. Which we also know that when we give, we benefit so much. So this is what, like, I want to move people in telling stories to have the warm and fuzzy feeling, and then, you know, and to be fired up to take action. And you say it all the time, you know, and which is why you talk about, like, how dire things are, but you also give everyone hope. You have a vision of what society could be if we can tap into our humanity and tap into and get that oxytocin flowing, get the, you know, more of the optimism and the love and the caring and empathy and all of those things. So it is a self, like, love begets love. Hope begets hope. And we know when people are hopeful and optimistic, what they're capable of, they can start to take risk and see their potential and reach for their potential. If people have the mentality of scarcity, as you talk about, they're all they can think about is, like, survival. It's survival mode. And then you can't think about caring for others and loving others and all of those other things. So anyway, I mean, there is a corollary between what you're trying to do in politics and what I try to do with storytelling. And it all comes down to humanity and what makes us human and bringing out the humanity in us, because that's when we are our best selves.
That makes me really proud that you think we're doing the same kind of work, Cheryl. That makes me very happy. You know, it is about dialing up humanity. I have a question for you that, like, I don't know if we've ever discussed this really, but when I told you I was running for president and I said, hey, when you make this campaign video, like, what did you really think?
I remember, I'll never forget the moment when you told me you were running for president. We were at an event screening at Grand Central Tech. And you had just sold your book, The War on Normal People. You hadn't started to write The War on Normal People. And the people were watching the movie, and whenever we were at these event screenings together, when people watched the movie, it was a time for us to catch up, which was wonderful. And you said, I'm going to run for president. And you know what? I said to you what I would say to my children when they told me they were going to do things that sounded kind of crazy. I said, that's amazing. I said, Andrew, go for it. First of all, because I knew you well by then, and I saw how you had built Venture for America so fast, and I knew that you, more than anyone I've ever met, can will things into being. And this is also storytelling. The stories we tell ourselves either propel us or hold us back. So, you know, we filmed with Cassandra, who was born a congenital amputee, and her whole life told herself and other people told her, you only have one arm. You cannot be a nurse. She wanted to be a nurse. She was told, you cannot be a nurse. You only have one arm. And then when she got onto social media and saw that there were other people with one arm who were nurses, if you can't see it, you can't be it, she realized, wow, I can be a nurse. And when she told herself, I can be a nurse, she figured out how to make that happen. You are someone who tells yourself, I am going to do this, I can do this, and then you make it happen. You just will it into existence. And that is also the power of storytelling, the stories we tell ourselves. And so when you said, I'm going to run for president, I thought, okay, it's crazy, but Andrew is, he's going to do it. I mean, I didn't think you were going to be our candidate, but I did think that you were going to make a lot of noise and that you were going to reach your goal of making universal basic income and automation and all the things and, you know, looking at a different way to measure progress in our society, that you were going to make them part of the public, you know, discourse, throughout the campaign and onwards. And so, it, you know, you really have done that and you continue to do that through Humanity Forward, which is, and Yang Speaks and everything you're doing. So again, what did I think? I thought, this is so bold. This is so crazy. If anyone can pull off success, whatever success is going to look like, it's Andrew. If anyone has the guts to do this, it's Andrew. And when you call, when I remember when you asked me to do the video, you called, you got my voicemail and you left a message and you said, hey, Cheryl, it's Andrew calling. I have a favor to ask. Can you call me back? And I knew, it's like, okay, Andrew wants me to make his campaign launch. I knew it. I just knew it. And I thought, I am honored. I would be honored. That's what I thought, Andrew.
Well, you definitely delivered. You know, you called back and said, yeah, let's do it, which I was endlessly grateful for, because you didn't have much to work with, and like, we weren't paying top dollar or anything close to it. It was just a yet another labor of love. And I hope you felt proud of everything that happened thereafter, because
so proud.
I genuinely think that it might not have happened if not for your belief in friendships. So thank you.
Wow. It would have happened. But I was honored to be part of that journey and to be part of helping, you know, you start the campaign. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So if anyone wants to see your work, where should they go?
They should go to creativebreed.com. And I have to update it because some of my recent work isn't there. But and Generation Startup is generationstartup.com. And we were on Netflix for 2 years, as you know, no longer, but we're still on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, YouTube, Voodoo, Hoopla, Tubi. I mean, Generation Startup is widely available and still moving people.
You should know, my cousin sent me a picture of my face on the monitor of the airplane seat in front of her because she was watching your movie on a plane, being like, hey, look, look at this. So the movie Generation Startup is indeed everywhere. And I'm sure it is moving people all over the world still to this day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're just getting started. There are so many stories to tell, and we do have to do everything we can to try and humanize this land right now, because it needs you more than ever. So thank you for everything, Cheryl. And thank you for helping make me more human. I genuinely had your voice in my ear the entire campaign. I was like, you know what Cheryl would say? Cheryl would be like, Andrew, you know, you just have to try to express your humanity. So you should know you had a big impact on me.
Thank you. I think it was the natural evolution, but I hear you and I appreciate the thanks, but you know, watching you, for me, that was so, what I was most proud of. I mean, just to see you grow and evolve. You know, you were always incredibly human. So it wasn't like you weren't human and you became human. It's just you allowed yourself to express that more and more and more, you know, as you, and now, you know, I think you're, you, like, you just are so comfortable in that vein and place.
Well, thank you. We have to unlock and elevate people's humanity. I feel like, you know, in a way, what you saw with me, I think we need to activate in more people, you know, like that process. And I think, I genuinely think our economy and our culture have put us, many of us, in boxes where people just feel like they have like a narrow role to fill or like a narrow set of things they can express. And that if you can let them out of that box, then the sky's the limit. I feel like that's what your work's about. But yeah, like it's, I learned a lot, and we are just getting started, as you said. And you're gonna be there every step of the way. I'm gonna call you next time, now. But this time we'd, you know, have more to work with, I'm sure.